You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
It is Thursday, October 8th. This is The Christian Commute. I'm your host, Seth Dunn. And you're riding home with me on a two-show note day. You know, the scripture wasn't that long, but yet it took two show notes. So that's what you have to look forward to on this full episode of The Christian Commute. Today's show title or show topic, I'm going to call it The Minister's Family. I almost called it The Pastor's Family, but I think I'm going to expand it to The Minister's Family. Oh man, I feel hot in this car. It's only 80 degrees outside. I've got just enough gas to get home. I have a question in the inbox about plagiarized sermons. Sort of. I don't even know if you can really call them plagiarized. By the way, the inbox is getting awful light. So if somebody wants to write in a question about Christian theology or apologetics to Seth Dunn, 88@gmail.com. That'd be great. And look at this. What a poorly timed intro. I like to time the intro to where I'm pulling onto the freeway and I can start the Bible chapter review, but now I'm just going to have more awkward dead time as I pull from the side road to the interstate. And this is how close I work to the interstate. Isn't this great? Some people, they work far away from the interstate, and they have to go through a lot of side streets to get to where they're going. Now, if you've got a good office building, if you can pull right off the interstate and get there. I think the worst office I ever had off the interstate, that's a toss-up. Georgia Pacific, I had to go through a couple side streets down some iffy streets in Atlanta. But when I worked on Glen Ridge, you could see the interstate from the office. It still took 15 minutes to get there. That's probably the worst. All right, so here I am pulling onto the interstate. Now we can get started on the Bible chapter review. Today we begin Mark chapter 6. And Jesus is teaching at Nazareth. Teaching at Nazareth. So after returning from the land of the Gerasenes back to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, and raising up Jairus' daughter, Jesus returns to his hometown of Nazareth. So this is where Jesus came from. This is why he's called Jesus of Nazareth. Now, he was born in Bethlehem, and he spent the earliest time of his life in Egypt because he had to flee from King Herod. But he eventually settled with his family in Nazareth. So here comes the Sabbath day when he goes back home. And Jesus enters the synagogue and begins to teach. And the listeners are astonished. And they're thinking, where is this man getting these things he's teaching? Who's giving him this wisdom? And how's he doing such miracles? So they're astonished at the wisdom of his words and his teaching, but they're also astonished that it's coming from him. And hold on. Ooh, this is a big-time Mason I'm passing. He's got a Mason license plate, an Eastern Star sticker, and a Shriner Star. Let me look at him. Oh, it's a woman. It's not the husband. Oh, I just wish I could somehow give these people... In my car, I have my Mason book. All right, back, focusing on the task at hand. The people in the synagogue, it's like they almost despise him. Is this not the carpenter, they say? And they said, isn't this Mary's son? Aren't his brothers with us? And they name them James, Joseph, Joses, Judas, and Simon. Don't we know his sisters? In other words, We know this guy. We know his family. They're right here. But this guy's walking around like a prophet. He's all of a sudden teaching in the synagogue. He's healing people. Who does he think he is? They're taking offense. Everywhere Jesus is going, people are flocking to see him. They just want to get close to him. We just saw a woman who knew if she could just touch him, she could be healed. We saw a synagogue official seek him out through a crowd so that Jesus could heal his sick daughter. But Jesus goes to his own hometown, to his own hometown synagogue. Imagine if God came into your local church on Sunday. Imagine that. Like, instead of your preacher, it's like, oh, today we have God himself. This is what happened in Jesus' hometown synagogue. God himself, God incarnate, walks in. And they're like, oh, is this Mary's son? Where's this guy coming from? They take offense. So Jesus tells his disciples, he says, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and among his relatives and in his own household. And the Bible says, and he could do no miracle there except a few healings. And he wondered at their unbelief. Not in a good way. He's like frustrated by it. He marveled at, why are these people so unbelieving? And then finally Mark says, and he was going around the villages teaching. So he's going village by village teaching, town by town teaching. But he marvels at the unbelief in his own town. And it says he could do no miracles there. So remember the earlier miracle stories here in Mark? He said, like he told the woman, your faith has made you well. And remember when he heals the paralytic. All throughout this early part of Jesus' ministry, he's talking about the faith of the people. Remember what he says to Jairus, just believe. Don't worry, don't fear, just believe. Just have faith. Well, the people there in his hometown don't have the faith. Well, some people do because he does a few healings. But because of their unbelief, he doesn't do any of the larger scale miracles. With, like, raising somebody from the dead. He's not casting out demons. Healing paralytics. But he is doing some. He is doing healings. In other words, people are not totally without belief. And people look at this story and they say to themselves, well, is Jesus' power limited? Like, you have to believe in Jesus, you have to have faith, or he can't do anything? I thought he was God, I thought he was sovereign. And it says he couldn't do any miracles there. So what's the deal? And people start to wonder, is the power within us? And then you start to get these word of faith people. If you have enough faith, God will make it happen for you. But if you don't, it's not that God won't make it happen for you, it's that he can't. So people see this word couldn't, not wouldn't, but couldn't, and they start to think, well, is his power limited in some way, or does the power lie with us in our faith? So I don't think, oh gosh, hold on. Let me just get around this mess. There's people just crawling in the fast lane, and I can't get around any of them because there's a bunch of box trucks in the middle lane. You know, I know the Bible says I could have faith to move mountains. I really want faith to move these slow-driving people out of my way. And look, there's just one person. It's just a jerk. You don't care about others, and you just want to hold everybody back. It's not loving your neighbor. That's what it is. All right. We're talking about faith. I'm trying not to lose my place, but I'm going way around this person. I don't like the new design of the Ford Explorer. By the way, that's who was going slow. It looks kind of more kind of a rounded off car. I like the old truck looking Ford Explorers. All right. So, faith. All right. Is Jesus limited by a lack of faith? Does Jesus not have the power to heal without somebody having faith? All right. Let's talk about that. I don't think that Mark is trying to teach a principle about faith healing or word of faith, but I do think that word of faith people can look at this and say, you see, it's up to our faith. Miles Monroe was right. Jesse Duplantis was right. It's up to our faith to be healed. It's not God, it's us, or it's us working with God. Here's the deal. Faith is a gift. You ain't born with it. Who gives you your faith? Biblically speaking, who gives you your faith? The answer is God. Who is Jesus sent to? I'm not talking about the righteous or the unrighteous, but who is Jesus sent to? Jesus is sent to God's people. The people without faith don't have faith because God didn't give it to him. Or God didn't give it to them. God did not give them faith. They're faithless people. So Jesus couldn't do any miracles. Well, Jesus is God. Yeah, and God didn't give him faith. Jesus is not doing miracles for faithless people. Because those people aren't God's people to begin with. So on the surface, it may look like Jesus is somehow limited. Or maybe Mark just wasn't being careful with language. That was maybe what it looks like. But when you look at the people didn't have faith, and he's like astonished at their lack of faith. Well, it's because God didn't give them any faith. Who's doing the miracles? God. Who's giving the faith? God. Who didn't give these people faith? God. Who didn't do the miracles? God. See that? It's all God. God is sovereign. Jesus is God. But Jesus isn't doing things for the faithless people because the faith wasn't granted to them by the Father. Rather, all they can think about is, just, who's this guy? I saw this guy grow up. You know, this is the carpenter. He's over here building stuff. Now he's doing miracles. Now he's doing healings. What in the world? And they look at him with contempt. And that the old phrase rings true. The proverb, not a biblical proverb. Familiarity breeds contempt. Familiarity breeds contempt. Think of the old Eagles song. Johnny come lately, the new kid in town. Everybody loves you, so don't let them down. When the new kid in town gets all the attention because nobody's familiar with it. He's the latest, greatest thing. But eventually, even the new kid gets old. Nobody's interested in him anymore. And there's a new kid. Jesus wasn't Jesus is the new kid in town to all the people he's going doing miracles with. But to the people who he grew up with, they just hold him in contempt. They're like, why, you know, he's no better than us. That's what they're thinking. The Bible doesn't say that, but that's what they're thinking. He's no better than us. He's just, I know his sister. I took his sister to prom. You know, they didn't have a prom. I'm exaggerating. Like we might think. He's nothing special except he is. So Jesus leaves there and goes to minister in other villages. Now, let's go to the inbox. This question comes from Chris in Louisiana. What are your thoughts about a pastor buying Rick Warren sermons and preaching them almost word for word? What are your thoughts about a pastor buying Rick Warren sermons and preaching them almost word for word? So there's two problems here. One is the plagiarism. And a second problem is that you're plagiarizing Rick Warren. So think about if you're a kid in class and you're going to cheat off your neighbor's paper. If you're going to cheat, at least cheat off the smart kid. Copy somebody's answers whose answers are going to be right. If you cheat off a D student, you're going to make a D. All right, so cheating is wrong. Yeah, plagiarism is wrong. We're going to get to that. But who are you trying to emulate and who are you trying to copy? That makes a difference. So if you're going to plagiarize somebody's sermons, pick somebody who isn't a horrible preacher. You say, well, Rick Warren wrote Purpose Driven Life. He's a good preacher. Rick Warren is a good speaker. He's an engaging speaker. But he doesn't faithfully exposit the Bible. Rick Warren is an organization builder. Like, he's like a management guy. He's a vision caster. Like a Peter Drucker, Frederick Taylor management philosophy, how to get people together. Seeker-sensitive, in the vein of Willow Creek. Saddleback, his church is not a church I would recommend anybody go to. And then you have the problems with, you know, Rick Warren and the peace plan and Chrislam and just no good. No good. If you're going to copy somebody, you could have copied John MacArthur. No, you copied Rick Warren. But you can buy off of the internet sermon resources from Rick Warren. Because Rick Warren's a businessman, right? He's going to not just make his living preaching sermons at Saddleback. And by the way, he doesn't. I don't even know if he gets paid at Saddleback. I think he gives almost all of his money back because he's made so much money off of that Purpose Driven Life book. And he basically preaches for free. Nevertheless, he makes his sermons. I think you can buy them at sermons.com or pastors.com or something like that. You can buy Rick Warren's sermons. And he's not the only one who does this. You can go to Lifeway, like when Alex Kendrick comes out with a movie, and you can buy sermon outlines, and you can preach that dude's movie. So it's not just Rick Warren. There are places where pastors can go to buy sermons. Like, I remember when I was at Georgia, you could go to the bookstore if you skip class all the time and just buy somebody's notes. Well, you can do that. You can buy sermons. So one, Chris, you got a problem that somebody thinks Rick Warren is the go-to guy. That's another problem. The second problem is the plagiarism. And where does it say in the Bible, thou shalt not plagiarize sermons? Because think about this. If somebody preaches a biblically faithful expository sermon and you repeat it, is it the message the same? It is. It is the same, and that's kind of the point. You're not really getting those biblically faithful expository sermons from Rick Warren. But here's another point. If you have a recording of a sermon that's biblically faithful and expository, can't you just tell your people, hey, go click on this link and listen to it? Don't just repeat it and act like you did. Say it word for word. It's like, oh yeah, that's mine. Because then you're being lazy. Because you think a pastor generally gets paid. So a pastor is paid for his time. Because he could be out making tents, right? He could be out. He could be a CPA in a Kia Soul like me. But no, he is pastoring a local church, and he's dedicating his time during the week to take care of the church. And part of his time is spent sermon planning. But he's not sermon planning. He's buying a sermon and then memorizing it and practicing it. You know, I hope he spends his own money and not the church's money to buy these sermons. It's not really his message, it's Rick Warren's message. And then you're like, well, who's your pastor, this guy or Rick Warren? It is unethical to pass someone else's work off as your own. So, at the very least, Chris, I think your pastor, if this is indeed your pastor, I think this pastor will say is unethical and lazy and undiscerning. He seems like a hireling to me. And this has happened to me before. And try being the one who notices it. So think of yourselves, listener. You guys are the type of people who spend your free time listening to Christian media. You listen to this podcast every day for 45 minutes. And then there's going to be other podcasts you listen to by popular preachers. But most pew sitters don't do that. The only preaching they hear is the preaching of their own local pastor. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's good. That's the presuming he's qualified, that's the preaching upon which you should focus. And now I'm having doubts as to whether I'll have time for the show topic. Before I started recording this show, I was a consumer of Christian media. So every day on the way home, I record this show. And then every day on the way to work, I listen to the show to make sure I didn't make any mistakes. Yeah, and usually there are mispronouncements or something like that. Nothing to really correct or a misspeaking in some way. But I listen to it because I don't want to have any of my mistakes go uncorrected. So this show consumes almost my entire Christian media time. But before I started podcasting this show, I would listen to three or four popular preachers on the way to work. I used to listen to Michael Youssef, Johnny Hunt, Bryant Wright. I would listen to their sermons. I would listen to sermons from a pastor in town. I would listen to William Lane Craig's podcast, Jordan Hall's podcast. I used to listen to Ravi Zacharias' radio program. So I was out there listening to the popular Christian stuff. And I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again. Episode 1051, same story. I go into church one day at Expedition Church, and the preacher there has had to become bivocational because the church couldn't support him. And he had planted the church himself, and he had become a hospice chaplain. So he was all over Northwest Georgia trying to witness to dying people, really, and I think it was a good job for him, and I think his gospel witness and sharing the gospel saved some people at death's doorstep from the fires of hell. But now that he was driving all over, he couldn't really sit and prepare biblical sermons. Sometimes he didn't have time. And what he should have done was ask somebody else to preach. And sometimes he did, but sometimes he didn't. So what he'd do a lot of times is just almost give like sort of a book report of what he was reading, a principle he got from a cool book as filler time. He'd play movie clips as filler time. But one time he came in and he just started giving this talk about culture and apologetics. And it wasn't word for word, but it was point by point the same talk I'd heard Ravi Zacharias give on the radio. I think it might have been a talk about Christmas. I'm having trouble remembering. But I had heard the talk on the radio a couple months ago. And I recognized it. And he's like, you're quoting Chesterton. You're quoting W. B. Leckie. These are the same people Ravi Zacharias quotes all the time. Hey, you just gave the same thing word for word. And I confronted him about it later. And he's like, well, you know, I mentioned Ravi Zacharias said something. And I said, Tim, you stole that sermon from Ravi Zacharias. You didn't prepare a sermon. You presented it as if it was your own. You could have just told us to listen to the podcast. I said, you know what? It was better the first time I heard it from Ravi Zacharias. You ain't no Ravi Zacharias. Now I had to hear it from you. It looks like you came up with all this. Like, you're getting paid to do this, and you didn't spend your time doing it. You're not shepherding people. You're just repeating what other people say. So that's what I would say about a pastor who plagiarizes anybody else's sermons, whether it's Rick Warren's or not. You're not shepherding people. You're recommending media for them. Netflix does that. I think Netflix, when I used to have it, would say, hey, I bet you'd like these movies. Maybe you should listen to this. Don't tell me what to read, or don't just, you know, regurgitate it for me. So that's pastoral malpractice, Chris. Unethical, dishonest, lazy, just lazy. But the people like Rick Warren and others who sell sermons, they know it's an industry. They know that people want to copy them. They have proven they can grow a crowd and make money. So they just sell their methodology. You can do it just like me, like a franchise. Buy a franchise. We've done all the research work for you. All you have to do is show up, open the door, and order our stuff. And quite frankly, Chris, most people will be none the wiser. Because like I said, they don't consume Christian media. They just sit and listen to their pastor on Sunday. And you know what? If my pastor plagiarized a Rick Warren sermon, I'd have no idea because I don't listen to him. And the only time I'm listening to Rick Warren is when Chris Roseborough reviews him on Fighting for the Faith and tears his sermon apart for how unbiblical it is. So, I mean, I wouldn't catch that one. But now I feel very lowly for that pastor. And think about it this. What are you paying that guy for? I wonder what he makes. Because like, I went to seminary, right? And I spent $20,000 and unlimited hours. There's no counting the hours plus the $20,000 worth of tuition. And by the way, that's what I paid. That's before all the financial aid from the denomination. And, you know, God knows what I spent on books. So, I mean, think of somebody like I trained for the pastorate. I've done all this training. I took speech class at UGA. If all it takes is somebody to get up there and give a speech somebody else did, you don't need a seminarian for that. You don't need somebody who's trained. You can just hire anybody. No, you're overpaying. Just economically speaking, forget about it being unethical or stupid. You're overpaying if you've got a guy. If you've got a guy who has to get his sermons from Rick Warren, why can't you get your sermons yourself? And again, I'm not trying to be the hero or be arrogant, but guys, I just told you what I've been through 5.5 or I guess 6.5 chapters of Mark with you now. I haven't put 5 minutes of preparation time into any exposition of Mark that I've done since we started the book. I just read it and like, that's what it means. Oh, this is the pattern. He's doing lesser miracles and then he's doing greater miracles. That takes me 5, maybe 10 minutes just to put little bullet points down on a sticky note. And I think you guys are being edified. So imagine how much more in-depth it would be if I actually, because I've been trained, sat down and wrote out a sermon outline. Like I did the other day, because on Sunday I went and preached a sermon to a Bible study group of FCA kids. And I actually sat down and thought, all right, Colossians. And what did I do here? What's going on in Colossians? Let me outline it. Let me, you know, cross-referencing, opening the Bible and reading the other cross-referenced text. I'm doing this show off the top of my head. If you've got a paid preacher, shouldn't he be able to sit down and do that? I tell a guy like that, like I know a guy on the internet who just does stuff off the top of your head. You can't even do that. You're buying sermons off the internet? What's wrong with you? Why are you a pastor? Who are you taking care of? What is your calling in life? People like that just make me sick. I understand that there's going to be bivocational people like Tim, but who run out of time. And if you run out of time, just be honest. Oh, I ran out of time. So I thought we'd talk about this. That was interesting. Or, you know what? I ran out of time. I don't really have a sermon this week. Let's have a prayer meeting instead or sing songs for 30 minutes. Sorry. Just be honest. Or I ran out of time, but you know, while I was in the car, I listened to this really good sermon from someone other than Rick Warren. And I want to present some points to you. Like saying, this is not my work, but let me present these points to you and maybe we can think on them. Just be honest. Why am I going to sit here and listen to you rehash a Rick Warren sermon to me? If I wanted to listen to Rick Warren, I'll listen to Rick Warren. That's just really pathetic, Chris. And I'll tell you what, if you know, I'm going to tell you this. I know you're asking this hypothetical question, but this didn't just pop in your head. I have to believe you heard of somebody doing this or you know someone doing this. Chris, write me the church and the name of the man who's doing it, and I will make him an example on Pulpit and Pen. Like, I'll make you famous. I'm like Billy the Kid and Young Guns 2. I'll make you famous. I want to make this guy famous. This person who claims to be the shepherd of this church does this. Send me his name. I want him to go down in infamy like Pearl Harbor. This is not a saying, well, we need to rehabilitate this guy. We need to correct him. No, no, no. Teachers are held to a higher standard. It's not some kid. It's not some 17-year-old kid or 19-year-old kid. It's a grown man saying he's a pastor. Ooh, that burns me up. Now, I've almost run out of time for today's topic. I'm very close to my house, but it's not that great of a topic anyway, so I'm going to do it. In fact, I thought of this topic this weekend, and then I thought of a better one on the way to work, but I forgot what it was, but now I remember. So, Jesus in the present tense is the topic I plan to do tomorrow, and I think it's better. But for now, let's talk about the pastor's family, or the minister's family. And here's an example, and I'm not blaming Rick Warren or Kay Warren for this, but Rick Warren, his son committed suicide. And that may not be Rick Warren's fault. You know, if you commit suicide, it's your fault. I don't know if Rick Warren was a bad father or a good father, but I know he's been through that, and I feel bad for him. I wouldn't want that to happen to anybody. Just because Rick Warren's a false shepherd and is awful doesn't mean I want bad things to happen to him. But he's had that in his family, and everybody knows about that because he's a popular figure. But when you see these big-time ministers like Rick Warren, or like Johnny Hunt, or to beat this dead horse, like Ravi Zacharias, these people who spend their career in quote-unquote ministry traveling all over speaking everywhere. They're at a different place every week speaking. Or a different conference. Or they're getting interviewed, or they're writing books. Mark Driscoll comes to mind. You got, dude, Mark Driscoll, you got a family, but you're planting multi-campus churches, and you're pastoring a church, and you're writing books at the same time. Like, when do you have time to go to the bathroom? And just in the last 2 days, I had more work to do. I wasn't done with my work when I left work today, but I said, you know what? I haven't seen my kids in 2 evenings. At all. Like, one evening they were asleep. I didn't see them at all. And one evening I got to kiss them goodnight, and they were in bed. They got out of bed to answer the door. And so whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to do it tomorrow. Because I've beat my deadlines, and I'm going to do it tomorrow. I'm going to go home. So I know what it's like to miss time with my kids for work. And also miss time with my wife. And when you're the pastor of a local church, that can happen to you just because you have so much to do. You can get caught up not only in your God-given ministry at the local church, but all the little extra stuff you do, like trying to write books or trying to go speak at conferences and make a name for yourself. And when you look at the top guys who make a name for themselves, and their ministry gets outside of their local church, and now they're a book guy or a conference guy, you got to start asking yourself, how many days out of the month are they away from their family? Like, I look at people, and I'm talking like regular job type people, like maybe an airline pilot or even a fireman or a long haul truck driver. There's a lot of people who miss their family a lot, and they're just out trying to earn a living. And there's nothing wrong with that. And the way it works with firemen is, you know, they're 3 days on and 3 days off. So they are with their family for those 3 days. And the same thing can happen with an airline pilot. But, you know, you think, what's that old song? 18 wheels and a dozen roses. 3 more miles on a 3-day run. 1 more song on the all-night radio. Then he spends the rest of his life with a woman he loves. You know that song about the long-haul trucker who he's finally retiring, he's going to enjoy retirement with his wife? Like, there are people whose jobs take them away for their families. But should ministry be that job? Aren't there churches in every town? Who needs you so bad in the next town over? These international ministry types. And aren't they asking for it? When they spend time away from their wives and away from their kids, aren't they asking for prodigal kids? Aren't they asking to risk having an affair because they never see their wives and their wives are unhappy with them? So, I mean, look at some of the what you call the top people. Look at Jerry Falwell, all right? When his ministry got beyond Thomas Road Baptist Church, then he had Liberty University, and it became giant. And then he's head of the Moral Majority. Look at the son he left in charge. Jerry Jr. When you think of the qualifications of an elder and you think being a good manager of your family and children who believe, and you look at Jerry Jr., do you think, boy, I bet Jerry Falwell Jr. was qualified? Not Jerry Falwell Jr., I'm sorry, Jerry Falwell Sr. Jerry Falwell Sr.'s dead. He's not a pastor anymore. But looking at his family, because Jerry Falwell's heart's been Jerry Falwell's heart his whole life, Jerry Jr. It's always been like that. And then when you look at Charles Stanley, you know, his wife up and left him. Why? Was the ministry more important? Look at Andy Stanley. The fruit of Charles Stanley's personal life, not First Baptist Atlanta, but his personal life, is a divorce and Andy the Wolf Stanley. And I know it's hard on pastors' families because they're always scrutinized. But guys, they're scrutinized for a reason. Don't just look at the man speaking on stage and making a good point. Think about, what about his family? How often does he see his kids? Or, here's by the way, look at the minister's family. Do they all work for him? Are they all a part of it? Do they all, you know, do they all have $100,000 a year jobs with his ministry that they couldn't get with anything else? And are they ministers, or are they in some kind of family business? This is business. So there's a lot of things to look at. You know, it seems judgmental, but man, look at how somebody spends time with his family. If he's in the ministry, his relationship with his wife, his relationship with his kids, and the activities of his kids. And that will tell you a lot about whether or not that man is qualified. Where's my wife? I hope that car's in the garage. Not because I'm hungry, because I want to see my family. Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again tomorrow. As always, God bless. And as always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about beings.
Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to sethdunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.